2. Mercy is mystery. Mercy is not a human word. It is identical with mystery. It is the mystery from which everything comes, upon which everything is supported, and in which everything will end, inasmuch as it is communicated to human experience. The description of the prodigal son is the description of mercy that invades and penetrates the life of that young man. The concept of forgiveness, with a certain proportion between mistakes and punishments, is in some way conceivable for human reason, but not this limitless forgiveness that is mercy. Being forgiven arises here from something absolutely incomprehensible to man, from the mystery. In other words, from mercy. It is what cannot be understood that ensures the exceptionality of what can be understood, because God's life is love, caritas, absolute free giving. Love without profit, humanly without reasons. Humanly, it appears almost as an injustice or something irrational, precisely because we do not see any reasons for it, because mercy is proper to being, to the infinite mystery. The reality of mercy is the supreme opportunity that Christ and the Church have for making His Word reach man, not just as a mere echo of this Word in man. How does the infinite mystery behave towards us? By comprehending and forgiving everything. And man has always rebelled at this. From the start, he rebelled against the fact that an other, albeit the mystery who had made him, should be the reason for what he was doing. Adam and Eve wanted to affirm their selves against the divine self. The whole of philosophy, inasmuch as it is irreligious, or at least contrary to the Christian God, is a continuous rebellion in the name of a supposed dignity of reason and of God's perfection to be respected. It is a refusal of how God manifests Himself. And if I want to be good to everyone, are you to complain to me? You, who only need to think of what I have forgiven you. Think of what I have forgiven you. But His being good to all makes our thoughts explode. It would be better if He were to make us children. It would make us understand at the age of 50 the taste of being children before their father and mother. May the peace of God reign in your hearts, St. Paul wrote to the Colossians. But I've done this and that. It is our cowardice, our pettiness and pride, that wishes to impose upon God's infinite liberality and magnanimity. For even the fact that it seems irrational to us, since we cannot demonstrate it, is truly part of the mystery. God instead overtakes us on all sides because, precisely through the astonishment that overwhelms us at His mercy, He causes us to feel first a sorrow that we have never felt before. But not an exasperated, selfish sorrow, such as when we feel our dignity is hurt and we feel horror at ourselves. Here we can understand how the one who hates God and wants, irrationally, to challenge Him gives no respite to our life and tries to drag us, too, into His wicked lie. He is the father of lies, Satan, as Jesus said. It's rather a matter of discovering the truth in us, who are small and weak in the face of the mystery of being. We should not wonder if weakness is weak. It is better to be children in the hands of mercy. So we do not offer any objections. None of us is merciful. But we must try to be. How is this possible? In virtue of the revelation of His mercy, which would seem to sanction all human behavior, but it does not, God fills us with sorrow for the evil that we were not even aware of before. How could a man be positive after having done certain things? Yet Peter says yes at once, before going back to consider all his misdeeds. He feels no more horror at what he had done, because horror sets man once more in the foreground. What imposes itself is sorrow for one's own sins, as the historic beginning of a love that waits to be answered. This is sorrow. Man is glad because God is alive. His is a sorrow full of gladness. But it is still sorrow, sorrow at oneself. All the same, it is a sorrow that laughs, like the sorrow of a child who has fallen down and whose face is wet with tears and weeps for the pain he feels, but smiles at his father and mother. Second, through our astonishment at His mercy, He makes us desire to be like Him. Even people who have no interest in the church or in morality desire to be like Him. They begin really to forgive their enemies, those who do them harm. So we can understand how Job, before the enemies who had destroyed everything he had, could say, "The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." when we get up in the morning, feeling the forgiveness that renews our lives, we also feel like saying, Lord, help me to be like you. For Jesus had already told his disciples, be merciful as your heavenly Father is merciful. This seems to go against good sense, but only up to a certain point, because it is desire that defines the soul of the new man. We are not truly human if we do not wish to be merciful like our heavenly Father. The question is whether or not we really desire it. So the miracle of mercy is the desire to change, and this implies acceptance, because otherwise it would not be desire for change, but pretension and presumption, and it would never become entreaty to an other. It would not be trust in an other. This desire defines the present, the instant of the man who is a sinner. The miracle is accepting oneself and entrusting oneself to an other present so as to be changed, standing before him, and begging. Entreaty is the whole expression of man now, in the instant. So there is no need to be afraid of anything, not even of yourself. And we feel like children whom the Father bends down to pick up. Man becomes truly a child held in his Father's arms, a person in his poverty, astonished by the mysterious perfection of God, Father, Son, and Spirit, asks to be like him. And this is not a bold presumption, but a realistic, simple supplication, like that of a child that is fully aware of itself. Every limitation opens up to an infinite reality. Thus, you not only feel that you can do things once more, you want to do things. Mercy appears historically like the opposite of revolution in all its characteristics. Its essential and historical fruit in the person is called peace, the reconstruction of a subject in all its powers for a new work. The prophet Isaiah said, "You are walking in the desert, but I have already built a new road. Do you not see it?" The desert is the image of someone who attempts revolution. This is the human pretension of pulverizing the endeavors produced by values acknowledged in previous ages. Although this pretension is destined to last but a few years, its direct immediate effect is destructive. The new road is really made of mercy and peace. This is the finest definition of hope.